You know, the passion really comes from the people. Welding, anything in the skilled trades, it's, you know, we're trying to kind of get rid of that blue collar mentality behind it. It's salt of the earth people that are trying to solve tomorrow's problems today. That's really what it comes down to. And success for me really is about building relationships.
Any clue how important blue collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue collar workers, our lives would cease to exist. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Joining us is Mark Fisher, a true innovator and subject matter expert at Lincoln Electric. With nearly 20 years of experience in the welding industry, Mark's journey is a testament to the power of dedication, innovation, and an unyielding passion for solving problems. From earning multiple certifications with prestigious organizations like AWS, RIA, FANUC, and Lincoln Electric, to mastering the complexities of robotic welding and manufacturing process improvement, Mark has seen and done it all. Welcome, Mark, to the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Nate Bowman, weld scientist, who I had on the podcast a few weeks ago, told me how passionate you are in the welding industry. And I know I've seen this on LinkedIn and I've seen your content and people sharing your stuff. I heard that when something major goes down, they call Mark. They got you really on speed dial. Where's that passion come from in getting into the welding trade?
Well, first, I appreciate Nate for putting that out there. It means a lot to me. You know, the passion really comes from the people. Welding, anything in the skilled trades, it's, you know, we're trying to kind of get rid of that blue collar mentality behind it. It's salt of the earth people that are trying to solve tomorrow's problems today. That's really what it comes down to. And success for me really is about building relationship, because that's sustainable. You can look at, you know, fast food. You can have a customer in fast food. Generally speaking, most people don't want to deal with customers because there's kind of an unmanaged expectation with customers. But when you have relationship, that's something you build, it's something you work at, it's something you sustain. And that's always my goal, is to build relationships.
That's a huge, important piece, especially when you're working with large corporations. And it's that customer sort of relationship. And you work with some large customers. The issues that they face must be just all over the place. And you get called in when things kind of sort of hit the fan. Can you kind of talk about a little bit about some of the issues that you've seen sort of out there where they need to call you in? And if they stop production, I'm sure the amount of losses just keeps going up and up. What have you seen out there?
Yeah, so it's good that you say that, because let's use the automotive industry, high volume. And typically downtime is calculated in tens of thousands of dollars a minute. So there's a high incentive to keep production running just by thinking dollars and cents alone. A lot of the issues, some of them can be self-induced. Honestly, you know, we can be the product of our own demise, really. But a lot of it can come down to something as simple as training or lack of people, which is the passion that you share, is getting more people in the skilled trade. So as they try to fill roles, you always have there's a gradual turnover of people. There's attrition in the skilled trades industry. And so bringing new people in, getting them acclimated, getting them trained, and getting that mindset back to keeping things up and running and productive, it's a hurdle. It's a real struggle.
What are you seeing companies do in that case? Obviously, we all know about the trade shortage. I mean, at a very high level, most people know there's a shortage, but they don't really realize that we need about 330,000 welders up until 2028. There's 153,000 welders retiring over, you know, the next handful of years. How do you sort of plug that gap? Are you seeing more interest level from kids coming into the trades, especially in welding.
Yeah, I am. I'm seeing a lot more interest in kids, the interest in welding and coming into the trades. What it's done, it's kind of shifted the industry. So if we look at welding, manufacturing can't stop. You know, there's been a lot of political incentive to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. And so with the gap, what that's created is the need for additional sources of trying to get manufacturing done. Part of the gap that's filled has been in robotics. So it actually shifted the mindset from just a person holding the torch to now a technical thing of someone programming the robot. So it's brought a different level to the skilled trade. So you still need welders. You still need someone that understands welding to be successful at programming a robot. But it's brought this kind of different technical aspect to it that didn't really exist as predominantly as before.
I remember going to the FabTech welding show last year, and I haven't been there in years. And I looked around and I saw all the robotics and all the machines. I was blown away about what technology, how far it's come over a course of a very short period of time. When you talk about programming machines, do you feel that kids are getting interested in the trades because there's a gamification? Kids are on the Xbox, kids are on the iPad, where they can, or callback technology, they're going on an iPad and configuring sort of the machine. Are you seeing that more of an interest for kids?
I am, but I'm also seeing that need fulfilled by the manufacturers themselves. So there's still a people problem. You know, if you had the bodies, you know, that's kind of where, you know, other countries are successful in maintaining low-cost products in high volume. They throw people at the issue. And that's an easy thing to do if you have enough people. In the United States, we just don't have the sheer volume some other countries do to toss bodies at the problem. And so cobots, to your point, you saw more cobots at FabTech. You're absolutely right. What the cobot industry has done is it's taken the idea of robotic welding and made it even easier. So they have simple, you know, grab the robot, you know, touch a button, and it kind of self-populates a program. They've really gone to great lengths to try and even eliminate that need for a typical hands-on programmer to something even easier. Because again, there's these continual shifts in manufacturing to fill that gap, to fill that need and keep product running, keep America running.
Is welding becoming a dying trade? I already say this, that the shortage that we have and not enough kids coming into the trade, can robotics or robots replace welding one day in the distant future?
You know, it's funny. I've had a couple posts before on LinkedIn, and you know, that always gets, you know, someone's hair ruffled. No, you're never going to get a robot to weld downhill pipe in a ditch for a pipeline. There's cross-country pipe, there's offshore pipe. You're never going to get a robot to handle all of those aspects. Underwater welding. I look at welding like a diamond, and a diamond has facets, and welding has many, many facets to it. Robotics is just part of it. It's part of that need to continue manufacturing. You know, there's an aspect to it where, you know, welding produces fume, and the goal is to not have the operator breathing in the weld fume. So there's fume removal that's a part of it. But robotic welding takes it to the next step. It actually creates a healthier environment for people because now the welder is not in the weld plume. Like I said, it's not going to fix everything. It's just, it's an aspect of welding that's just a portion of the business. We're never going to do away with handheld welding. Bridges, buildings, iron workers, like we need that to keep the growth of America.
This is why I always bang the drum about the skilled trades, that it's always a need. Right? It's always needed. And there's pushback out there. Oh, well, we could just throw AI and robots and this is where it's going. And that's going to help with the shortage. And I say, no, that's not. It's exactly what you described. You're not going to find a robot doing that type of work. And you talk about underwater welding. Wow. I mean, that's for the brave and the people can do that. I've seen them go down these narrow under a hole. I'm like, oh my God. That's for a certain type of individual, but the money is there for that type of work.
When you look at the welding industry as a whole, it's not just about someone picking up a torch or a TIG gun or a MIG gun. It's not just that. anyone that's interested in business or in R&D, product management, there are so many aspects that provide welding to the masses that's beyond just actually burning material together. I'm passionate about it, I love it, but it's the most interesting industry because of how many career paths there are to choose from.
Well, the opportunities are there, and the opportunities, I always say, are endless, and they can go in different directions. And I always say that if you learn a trade, you can use that at any point. There's always a need for that, whether it's welding or plumbing or electrical. You know, interesting enough, and I'm just thinking to myself about a family member of mine that was actually in a completely separate industry. He was working for a supermarket chain, and he decided to be an electrician at 35 years old. And I always say that it's never too late to be in the trades. Yes. Is he starting over? Yes. But he's happy. He's fulfilled. And this is what he wants to do. And he likes working with his hands. And there's a lot of people out there. Yeah. Maybe if you're in your 30s or 40s and you're starting over and you want to learn a trade, that's okay too.
And all the places that I go, there's always a maintenance man or an electrician or a tool and die maker, and they have to weld on top of whatever else they normally do during their day, because welding is a support to all these other industries.
Growing up in your family, was anybody else in a trade? Where did that piece come in for you?
It came in when I moved to Cleveland, actually. So I'm originally from a small town in Ohio called Lima. It's in the middle of the Rust Belt. It's known for building trains. Actually, if you've ever visited the Henry Ford Museum, there's a big steam locomotive engine there that was made in Lima, Ohio. It has a record for the most coal hauled through West Virginia. So that's originally where I'm from. I moved up to Cleveland. I had an opportunity, and previously I was in management. I was a supervisor at a mid-20s, came to Lincoln Electric and was in production. I had chose, management can have its blessings and curses. Middle management's called that for a reason, because it's a squeeze, right? Top to bottom. But I found in production, I could kind of change my view of things again, and had the opportunity at Lincoln to go to the weld school. That's how I got started in welding, was attending our weld school, which started in 1917. It's the world's oldest continually operating weld school. So I went to the weld school, came to the automation division, had an opportunity there, and then went from that into applications. They say the rest is history, but it's been a very rewarding career for me. And it was something that I had no knowledge of or exposure to before coming to Lincoln Electric.
What I feel is the passion behind it, because you need to have passion for stuff that you do. And I feel that you have the passion in helping customers solve problems, big problems.
Yeah, you're right. And part of that passion really comes from caring about your employer. You know, like it or not, some people just view a job as that. Some people have a career, some people have a job. And Lincoln is a company that there's opportunities. Every company has opportunities. And I've never told them no. And so they've continued to provide me with more opportunities by never saying no, by always being early, staying late, choosing to be part of solutions and not being a naysayer or, choosing to be part of a problem.
You also want to be with a company that you believe in the core values and what it stands for. Because if you've been there for 20 years or so, that means you're happy. And that means the company is doing right by their employees.
Next year, Lincoln Electric celebrates its 130th anniversary. How many companies do you know that are still doing the same thing they did, 50 years ago or 70 years ago, let alone 130? And it was founded with the principle to treat others how you want to be treated, the golden rule. From the top down, that is an ethos within the company. If it's right for the customer, it's right for us. Treat everyone how you want to be treated. And we also view everyone as a customer, internal or external. So coworkers, I view them as a customer, and I'm here to support them, because without my coworkers, I'm not successful.
It's a good way of putting it. And you want to be with a company that, treats you right, and you want to be with a company that's going to do better for the industry, which is doing. And I see the posts out there by Lincoln and, the support they have for welders and the shortage, and it's quite amazing what they've done. And every time that I go to a trade show, they have this massive, it's like a whole floor, and it's just like Lincoln, 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 Lincoln. It's a great organization. You mentioned about going overseas. And we talked about you're on the road quite a lot. And you had said that a lot of other countries kind of put people in the position. Are you seeing less qualified people come in? Just because there's people coming and doesn't mean that they're actually fully qualified with the skill set. Are you seeing that in certain areas as well?
I see it as they're just differently qualified. You know, in certain countries, they target things that people are good at a very young age. And then they foster that ability from a young age through adulthood. They continue accelerating at that thing that they're good at, whatever that target is. It's a different mindset than what we have in the US. You know, everyone beats the drum on shortage of skilled trades. Do we need universities? How many business managers do we need? It's kind of just a different mindset than what we have in the US. I've probably learned more about this industry and business traveling than I ever did in the last 20 years here domestically.
Trades are also looked differently in other areas as well, other countries. You're respected to a different degree than you are here in the States. I'm not saying this is everywhere in the States, but overseas, if you're a plumber, electrician, welder, you're looked at differently. And the way the system works is a lot different getting into the trade versus here in the States. I always feel that career exploration is very difficult here in the States, especially just in the schools. Shop class is not there where it once was to get someone interested in working with their hands. But the other portion of this is that if somebody is good working with their hands, it's not like the guidance counselor is saying, hey, you are good with your hands. Maybe you want to think about a trade. I don't think that conversation is happening. And even if they are interested in the trades, most people don't know where to go and they just give up. So I think we need to do a better job when it comes to career exploration. Are you seeing any differences anywhere else where it's a little bit easier and information is more readily available to get into the trades?
You know, in the US, like it or not, we have a high level of consumerism and there's more people interested in buying something than building something. I think that difference is really seen more outside of the US because they might not have the same ability to buy financially compared to make, build, and use for what they need. And so I think that's probably the biggest difference between what I've seen outside of the US versus within the US. We just tend to lean more towards things that are inexpensive, affordable, and can be bought instead of built and might not last as long.
I worry about the future of manufacturing. Obviously, a lot of that stuff is moved offsite, but I worry about the US economy. I worry about not enough people to fix the things we take for granted out there. And I don't want to wait 3 or 4 weeks for a plumber or an electrician where my toilet's on the fritz, my shower's on the fritz, I don't have heat. And that's an extreme case. But it seems like it's going in this direction. And it's not like robots or AI or technology are going to fix XYZ. And I don't think there is a quick fix. Yes, there's a lot of people like myself advocating for the trades and rah, rah, rah about the trades. But there's a lot of different things going on across the board in our country that we're not doing well enough that we can do a better job. I think the trades always had a PR problem. It's better than it was because last year, vocational school, trade school was up about 16%. And they're saying that Gen Z is becoming the tool belt generation. And I'm starting to see it turn a little bit. Kids are looking at it and saying, well, college is going to cost me X, but trade school is going to cost me this. And I can make more money right out of the bat versus taking on a tremendous amount of debt. So I think they're starting to see that where years prior, I am a case of going to college and there's nothing wrong with going to college, assuming that it's right for you. But I went to school for 4 years in the University of Rhode Island and came out more confused out of school than I was in school and changed major 3 or 4 times. And I was just kind of lost in the system. And I feel like a lot of kids are starting sort of to see that college is really not a guarantee to get a great job unless, look, you need to go to college, you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, there are certain areas, but now certain jobs, you don't need the degree. Kids are giving it a second thought now.
So to rewind a little, one of the things you touched on is a personal aspect. And you know, we always tend to put a kind of our thoughts and views ahead of most others. So, you know, you have a problem with a toilet or plumbing or electrical, it impacts you and your immediate family. So it's kind of a microcosm of where the issue is. You know, you look at the U.S. has had some bridges collapse. So, you know, when they started going back through paperwork and testing, you know, was it the inspector? Was it a non-credentialed inspector? Was it not frequent enough inspections? So we know that there's an infrastructure problem in the U.S. that obviously we need more people to get into that aspect of it. This podcast could turn into 2 hours if we started talking about linesmen and infrastructure and electricity and EVs, right? But like it or not, the world is headed in very specific directions. We need people that are going to help create the solutions for tomorrow that has to start today. And part of that is the skilled trades. You know, you look at companies that produce the big power lines, the structures that hold those enormous power lines are welded together. And then you have linesmen that handle the line. So they're such complementary in getting the work done and creating and maintaining the infrastructure in the U.S. There was that wildfire in California from one of the power line hooks that had broken. We know that there's a problem, and part of it can be political, part of it can be subsidies for infrastructure, part of it's privatized. Again, this could be a 3-hour podcast. We have to be able to have those conversations in getting people interested. I think millennials and Gen Z, I think they're becoming the tool belt generation, and it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see that ship finally turn.
We touched upon the infrastructure, and I know that could be a 2 or 3 hours, so I won't go too far down that path. But I was shocked when I saw that we're a C- infrastructure rating. And I always say, how do we get to an A+ if no one wants the job? It's great you want to spend trillions of dollars on infrastructure, but who is going to do the work? Also focus on the PR and the messaging out to get people into the trades. You know, look at wages. That's a concern. It's always been a concern. It's always been a concern in welding. And I see this quite often. I don't want to go down a whole path on the wages, but a lot of the pushback with kids, they're looking at it and saying, well, I can make $24.80 an hour doing welding as a median salary. That's a lot of work for me to get to a certain level in welding to do really well. But then there's pushback from other people who are in welding saying, look, it's not going to take as long as you think it's going to take. And you can do extremely well if you put the time and effort into it. And that's anything else. There's different sides to this. Kids are starting to push. Yes, tool belt generation, but they're also looking at the wages. And I don't think it's all wages. I do think kids also want recognition in companies. They want to be with a company, just like you said with Lincoln Electric, the core values, what they stand for, training and mentorship, and being with a company that really invests in them. So I don't think it's all wages, but it seems to keep coming back to that. I push back in the comments. So there's a lot of discussion back and forth about that, but it's always been an issue.
I think better versions of this in the future probably are a mixture of the trade schools themselves partnering with manufacturing. I said before that there's a difference between a job and a career. And you have some people that are fine with having a job, and that's perfectly fine. I'm not making light of that. But they don't necessarily need an 18-week or a 24-week comprehensive welding program if they're looking for a job. And I think it's an honest conversation manufacturing can have with these trade schools. And there's so many trade schools now, especially for welding. They're in regional areas. We know who the manufacturers are in the areas that are welding. Have the conversation. We need 200 welders by, you know, 2026, whatever, for this particular role. Train them for what you need instead of just having a 18-week program. Some of these schools, it's easier to get government funding for, and the government has an incentive to keep those jobs here in the U.S. I think it's a difficult conversation to have. The first step's the hardest, right? So have the conversation and start targeting the training around where the need is, not necessarily everything, because one size doesn't fit all, especially in the welding industry. If they're not going to be welding pipe, they don't need to learn stick welding. You know, if they're not going to be welding in California, which has seismic codes, they don't necessarily have to learn flux core and vertical up. You know, if they're not doing bridge work, it's easier to have the conversation if we're really digging down to where the need is and having an honest conversation around it, especially if we're looking at it regionally instead of just a blanket across the U.S. kind of conversation.
I have a lot of parents who come to me and say that my daughter or my son is interested in a trade. Let's use the welding trade, for example. If you were to go back in time, so if you're 16, 17, you know, let's say you want to be in the welding trade, what are the steps you would sort of take? It would be really helpful to parents to know, because they're trying to help their kid try to get into the trade that they know that they're interested in. But what would you do from the kid's standpoint? Like, okay, I'm interested. Now what? What would you say how to go about that?
I mean, first steps for me are always find out if one of the local community colleges or a vocational school has a welding class. If not, to me, it's a flow chart, you know, yes, no. After that, see who's got a local trade school that's available. After that, once you're in a trade school, all of these organizations, iron workers, manufacturers, you know, they send people to these schools. Who's the best you've got? Who's finishing top of the class? Who's got some natural ability? And after that, they're pretty easy conversations to have because everyone has to hire. Everyone needs to get people in the door. If they've done the due diligence and they've either targeted a local high school, vocational school, community college, then trade school, all of these people are turning up at the same place to look for the same people.
Those are good steps, because that is always a question that I get all the time of what do I need to do to get my son, my daughter into XYZ trade? And it's important to give them a roadmap or a flowchart, as you would say, in what direction sort of to take, because you don't want them to get to the point where it's like, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to give up. I'm doing something else. I'm not going to go into a trade. So it's extremely important for them to have a roadmap so they know what they need to do. And also, how many years do you need to invest in? Like you said, maybe there's certain certifications that you do or do not need depending upon where you're working, if it's California or somewhere else. So you know what to take versus not to take, because that maybe can cut down some time. Maybe you can take a job. One thing I do want to say is that in order to get good at something, you need to try different things, right? You need to see what you like and you don't like. You might take jobs that you might not be sort of satisfied with. It might take a job for a year and learn a couple of skills and you need to move on. Then you work at a different shop and then you learn a couple of skills and then you move on. I just want kids to understand that it's okay until you land at the place that you want to be at, but you should be able to be a sponge those first handful of years to pick up as much information and knowledge as possible. And hopefully you can attach yourself to someone who's been in the industry for a long time who can give you that advice, because I feel if you do speak to that individual, it can cut your time in half because they can give you, quote unquote, roadmap to success.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've told a few young people this. Win fast, fail faster. If you're winning quick, you're going to keep going down the path of it's that dopamine dump that we all have as humans. So if you're winning, you're going to continue down that path. If it's something you're not naturally good at or failing at, for the lack of a better term, it's okay to move on from that. Failures are still steps to success, right? As long as you're learning from them. I always feel like the first step is on time is already late. Early is on time. That's how my father taught me. He was a military man. It's a good thing to live by. If you're early, you're on time. Make friends with the oldest person in the shop and buy them a coffee. You'll learn more from that one seasoned person than you will just looking at Instagram on your phone.
If you're listening right now, that is great advice, because getting yourself aligned with the person who's got the best skill set, yes, it could be skill set technically, but also from a soft skills as well. You need to learn both sides. You need to have both, because some people have the technical skill, but they don't have the soft skills and vice versa. So learning both is a key to success and sort of moving on in the industry. I have a question for you as far as story-wise. I know you possibly can't share what type of company, but where you were brought in and it was just, you know, I don't want to say chaotic, but where things were down and you needed to come in and fix whatever issue it was. Can you share any stories or war stories?
I probably have too many. You know, I'm customer facing in the role that I'm in. And so you have to be able to, it's multifaceted. You have to be able to have conversations with management because there's a problem. You have to have conversations with CEOs because they're in control of the decisions that are made and they know that there's a problem. And you have to be able to have conversations with the people that are going to get the work done for the solution in place. So I have a lot of stories that I could tell. Again, it's now we're at a 4-hour podcast. One I could think of specifically, there was a company that I did some work for in California. They were in a situation where equipment was not performing as expected. And the problem was it was a communication issue. So there was too many welders, too many things happening at the same time, and there was a communication loss. And no matter who visited or what they tried, they just couldn't sort it out. And at some point, when it's gone on too long, it's too long for upper management, we'll say. And so there were a lot of eyes and a lot of pressure on that. And I was sweating, but being able to work with people back here in Cleveland, I would say any modicum of success I've had in the field was not from what I knew. It was from who I knew back at the ranch that I could get a hold of and recognize Mark Fisher's reaching out. He has a problem he can't solve. And then they would support. So again, I go back to everyone's a customer. Treat people how you would like to be treated and you'll get the solutions that you need. And it really becomes a team effort at that point. It's one customer and their issue is important to them. If it's important to them, I take that on me. It's important to me. And then as a team, we help solve the problem.
Well, it's always good to have a good team behind you, especially knowledgeable people who know exactly how to get things done. It must be exciting for you to walk into this. I mean, I understand it could be chaotic and there's a lot of money at stake, but it's got to be a rush to walk in there and they're looking at you for a solution. Do you typically do this by yourself? Are you with a team?
I'm normally by myself. I joke with some other team members that I never get to travel with friends. I see other people and there's, you know, a couple of them and, you know, they get to have dinner together. It's normally me in a hotel room by myself, whatever. Yeah, but normally it's just me by myself. I've joked before that I work with more PhDs than what they have at the Cleveland Clinic. And so there's a lot of exceptionally smart people that drive this business. They provide unfettering support for our customers and questions I may have to get a solution.
What's been sort of the longest project you've been on duration-wise?
So it wasn't an issue. It was actually a big success story for me. So we had a big project that was kicked off for a large customer in Kentucky. In total, it was 6 months worth of on and off support. So I would do 2 weeks on, a week off, 2 weeks on, a week off. And it was really coordinating the team of people that were there when I wasn't, so that then we had open communication. And that facility received, they're a supplier for a major automotive company. They received a Supplier of the Year award. They became a Gold Star facility. It was new equipment for them. So it was really training new equipment from what they had. So this is 10 years ago now. And at the time, the newest equipment they had was already 20 years old. A lot changes in technology in that short period of time. So really, it was that relationship and trust of showing them how the equipment works, transferring that knowledge to create long-term success. But it was a lengthy project and it was very successful.
Makes for a good case study.
It absolutely does. Some of the best projects I've had are when we get to have those conversations with the customer at the start. Here's what we want to do. Here's how we want to do it. What's the best way to approach that? Those are always the most successful.
I'm so curious. I just want to stay on the technology for a quick second because, you know, you've been around for the last 20 years or so in Lincoln Electric. What has happened in the last few years versus the prior years from a technology standpoint in welding?
Yeah, so there's a lot of technology going into robotics, you know, being able to have robots that will use sensors and cameras and essentially create programs of their own. There's always the conversation around lights out automation. You look at some robotic factories and they don't have lights on. They're robots building robots, really. It's that need to kind of progress technology to the point where it's consistent. That's the whole key, is consistency. I had a weld school instructor years ago tell me, be consistently good or consistently bad. We can work with consistent, right? If someone's consistently good, you can send them on their way. If they're consistently bad, you can train new best practices into them. And so getting manufacturing to the point where it's consistent, that's where a lot of the technology goes into, is being able to maintain expected level of output and it be consistent quality.
I'm a tool guy and I like the technology end of it. So it's always good to see from inside and your perspective of what's sort of coming down the pipeline. And I got a gist of it, obviously, when I was at the FabTech show last year, and I'm excited. I think I'll make it down to this one in Orlando, which I'm pretty excited about. So get to see what the newer technology is out there. What else do you have coming down the pipeline for you this year?
Great question. So still, you know, supporting current product, new opportunities with customers. And I've had three goals in my career, which was train myself out of a job. That's number one. I'm free with knowledge and transferring knowledge because, you know, if you give someone good information, you've earned their trust and you build a relationship, they're sustainable long term. The more knowledge I can transfer to somebody else, they get quicker answers instead of sending an email, a text message, carrier pigeon, whatever. You know, it's easier for them if they have the knowledge firsthand. So that's goal number one. Goal number two is be better tomorrow than we were today or yesterday. And if you learn from mistakes, if you take customer feedback in earnest and apply that, it's very easy to do. It's not a hard recipe to make that cake. And then lastly is, again, customers first. If it's right for the customer, it's right for me, and Lincoln knows it's right for us as well. That's really building on those. It's a continual effort. You never stop, never slow down, and continue pushing forward.
I was going to ask you about that, about training yourself out of a job. I did see that on your profile, so now I get a better understanding of it.
You know, some people give me a little heat for that because, you know, there's a lot of people that feel knowledge is power. You're going to find that anywhere you go. If someone knows more than you do, they feel they have some power over you. I don't feel that way. We were discussing before how much I travel. You know, at my age, eventually I'd like to slow down traveling. There's other stuff that I would like to do. There's other parts to this wonderful organization I'm a part of that I'd like to contribute to, which would require less travel. So I can't ever achieve my goals if I'm not open with what I know and sending that information freely to other people. Lincoln is the same as other companies. We're hiring. We train new people all the time. Tomorrow, I'm talking with a new group of people. So just being able to interact, give them a lifeline for when they get to where they're going, and being able to provide support later. That's how anyone can be successful.
How do you keep up and up on the newest trends, and how do you stay up to date?
Industry magazines, of course. The AWS Welding Journal is phenomenal to keep current with new things. Industry trade shows. You know, we have a lot of people. I don't attend all of them, but, you know, we had people that go to these various trade show events and talk and network with them. LinkedIn's a very good resource, really, to find out what other people are doing, what other industry players are looking at and considering, new technologies that are emerging. Realistically, in the world we live in now, information is at your fingertips. So it's easy to simply ask a question on Google and get, you know, albeit some of it is not perfect information, but you can at least start to dissect what's good information versus, you know, someone as a keyboard warrior, if you will.
Mark, where do people find you? How do they reach out to you? Social media, what's the best way to get in contact with you if they want to reach out?
I'm one of those people that just believes social medias and cell phones are probably the demise of our society. So I have no social media except for LinkedIn. So if someone wants to get a hold of me, send me a message on LinkedIn. I'm perfectly fine with that.
It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been a while. I wanted to speak with you and I've heard so much about you and I could hear it. You love the company that you work for. You're humble. You want to teach people and give them the knowledge. You don't want to hold it inside. You want to give it. And you even said you want to train yourself out of a job. I mean, now I really understand the person that you are, that you're compassionate and you love what you do. And I can hear it. I can see it. And it's wonderful to see. So I appreciate having you on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time. One last thing. One of the things you mentioned was discussing opportunities for young people. And I would say opportunities are there. The only thing that stops people are the ones that aren't willing to open a door. The opportunities are out there for anything. If they want to be in skilled trades, I mentioned before within welding, there's PhDs, there's universities that provide metallurgical degrees. There's endless opportunities. It's really up to the person if they choose to open that door and look at what's inside and then walk through or not.
You heard it there. And I'm in complete agreement with you because I feel is what you put in is what you get out.
Absolutely.
Thank you to our listeners, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool. Once again, we'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.